Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 104. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to New Zealand.
I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Oh, no.
15-hour flight. Oh, I don't think I'll ever be coming home. You know I love it. I got to see one more cathedral. In one more cafe, I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. As many of you know, a lot of Americans have a certain geographical ignorance, and it's puzzled many people why that is, but it was recently clarified for us in the Miss Teen USA pageant by Miss South Carolina, and I hope this will clarify it for you.
Okay. Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Thank you very much, South Carolina.
So I hope that helps. The video for that can be found at amateurtraveler.com. With the 25th anniversary of USA Today, they are publishing a list of 25 travel milestones. And these are their top 10 things that have changed travel in the last 25 years. Some for the better, some for the worse. And I'll put a link to the list on amateurtraveler.com. The top 10 that they list are online booking, the TSA airport security, airline e-tickets, roll-aboard luggage, smoke-free flights, boutique hotel chains, airports as malls, Indian casinos, GPS car navigation systems, and self-service ticketing kiosks. I, for one, know that when I try and explain to my children that we used to fly without smoke-free flights, for instance, that they just don't understand and can't imagine. I'd like to welcome to the show Linda and Craig, who are from the Indie Travel Podcast. You've seen some articles from Craig on amateurtraveler.com this year. I think Linda's on the microphone right now. They're sharing a headset, so we'll switch off between the two of them. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And you're originally from New Zealand, although it's been a little while since you've seen it because you've been traveling around for quite a while for those people who haven't been listening to your show. But we've brought you on to talk about your home country of New Zealand. I'm hoping we won't make you too homesick as we talk about it.
Oh, I love talking about New Zealand. You can never make me be quiet about it.
But before we jump into New Zealand, how long have you been on the road?
19 months.
You swear to me you do remember New Zealand, though.
I do. Okay. You can, if you've ever been to New Zealand, you'd never forget it, so.
I have been to New Zealand, and I know what you're talking about, even though I went probably the wrong time of year. So let's start with that. So let's say we have somebody who's going to go to New Zealand, and they only have, like, you know, those of us who don't stay on the road for 19 months, a couple weeks. When should they go, and what kind of itinerary makes sense in a in a smaller time window, if you don't have 3, 4, 5 months to explore New Zealand?
Well, you should definitely go in February because that's when it's summer. If you can get there for Christmas, that's great. But then it's always really busy because everyone goes home for Christmas. So February's great because all the kids have gone back to school, but it's still summer and the weather is nice and it's calmed down a bit. So you've got some nice long days and you can spend time at the beach. I'd recommend to take at least a month if you can get to New Zealand because it's such a long way to go. But if you have only got 2 weeks, I'd probably do, I don't know, maybe a week in the North Island, a week in the South Island.
And let's assume that people don't know New Zealand at all. We've already just jumped in here that there are two islands in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And what's on the North Island and what's on the South Island? What are the differences?
Well, the North Island is kind of shaped a bit like a fish, but not too much like a fish. And the South Island is shaped just as big and long and narrow. In the North Island, you've got the capital city, Wellington, at the bottom. And then you've also got the biggest city, which is Auckland, up at the top. In the North Island, there's all sorts of things like mountains and big rivers and lots of beaches. And it's up north, it's quite warm. Like in summer, it gets up to 32 degrees Celsius. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, sorry. And the South Island is more mountainous. There's a whole kind of spine of mountains down the west coast, and it's just absolutely stunning. It's a couple of glaciers, and it's gorgeous, but it's colder. You get a lot of snow in the south of the South Island.
32 degrees is just about 90 degrees Fahrenheit, for those who are metric impaired. Okay. So if you have 2 weeks, 4 weeks, where would you go? You said some part of the North Island, some part of the South Island. Where in the North Island? Let's tackle the North Island first.
Well, we're from Auckland, and one of our favorite places to go is Northland, which is the skinny bit at the top of the North Island. And there's some beautiful beaches, but I mean, there's not really that much else. It's just a nice place to go on holiday.
Right.
If you're wanting to go skiing, then there's mountains in the North and South Island, so you can have a week or 2 weeks at either of those places during the ski season. I visited the east coast of New Zealand, of the North Island, before we went away, and that was really lovely. Lots of wineries to visit and beaches. That was really cool. Otherwise, it might be best just choosing one area for 1 week and then another area for another week. And I think there's about 12 different regions of New Zealand that you can visit. If you like wine, then a winery tour would be great. You can go to the top of the South Island for that. We did a very short taster of the wineries of the South Island before we came away, and it was really cool. Just beautiful scenery, long, flat, open roads, and just really stunning.
Okay. Some of the places that I know that we looked at when we were going there, for instance, the North Island is also, and I'm going to say this wrong, Rotorua?
Oh, no, that was a good pronunciation. Very good.
With the hot springs and more volcanic activity.
Yeah, that's definitely worth visiting, but you've got to be aware that it does actually smell quite bad because of the sulfur.
Sure, sure.
People just don't know that it's going to smell bad, and it really does. But yeah, Rotorua is cool. Actually, one of our favorite places to visit is near Rotorua, although you have to drive into the forest for quite some time. There's natural hot springs. You have to walk for 4 hours through a forest, but we like walking, so it's not a problem. But yeah, there's just these natural hot springs that you can take a spa in. It's really cool. And you can do that in Rotorua as well, but it's a bit more touristy.
And what's the place that you like to go to that has the 4-hour walk?
It's called Kaweka Forest Park, and it's just in the middle of the North Island. You have to drive, well, we're from Auckland, so you have to drive down, past Taupo, and then you have to kind of almost get to Napier, and then kind of turn around and come back up again. So it's quite a long drive, but we really think it's worth it.
And so we've talked about the beaches at the very far north, which are just kick back, relax, enjoy the beach. We talked about Rotorua. The other two big spots for tourism that I know about on the North Island are Auckland itself and Wellington. Mm-hmm. Very different.
Oh, yeah, completely different. Auckland is a big city. And it has a lot going on. I mean, there's lots of theatre and things like that. Wellington is known as the cultural centre as well, though. So they pump a lot of money into the arts because it's the capital city. Mm-hmm. So Auckland is known as the city of sails. So it's on an isthmus. And so on both sides, there's a lot of water. So you can do all sorts of water sports like skiing or water skiing. And on the other coast, there's Piha. So there's a lot of surfing going on there. It's quite a good surf beach. Wellington is known as the Windy City, and it's really, really windy, but it's a nice place. I really like Wellington. The other place to visit in the North Island is the Waitomo Caves, which are really cool. They're probably about 2 hours' drive from Auckland. They're a network of caves, and you can go blackwater rafting there, but you can also just go on a tour.
I remember reading about that. Right. For those people who aren't familiar with blackwater rafting, which sounds like the most bizarre thing, what is it?
It's really great. You get put in a wetsuit and get given an inner tube. And you've got a guide and you've got a helmet with a light on. And they take you underground. So it's black water because you can't, it's black. There's no light to see it. It's not as rough as white water because it's kind of more calm rivers. But you just kind of float through these networks of caves. And we had so much fun. And what made Waitomo Caves quite special is that it's famous for its glowworms. So you're there under the water in the caves, as well as having your light, there's these glowworms on the ceiling above you. Really, really incredible.
Now, of course, you've just described being in the dark with worms all around. So there are some people who are acting differently. I thought that sounded like a really wonderful experience. How claustrophobic is it? How accessible is it for people who don't like to walk 2 hours to hot springs? And
this one is very accessible. You can get to us down to Waitomo. Or you can just drive down in a hire car, which was what I'd recommend, because if you're in New Zealand, you really need to get your own car because it's huge. It's a really big country, not really compared to America, but with the amount of space we've got, it's still quite a large country. And unfortunately, the public transport isn't the best, so definitely recommend getting a car. But yeah, you can drive there from Auckland in about 2 hours, and there's the Blackwater rafting is guided, and they provide all the wetsuits and things like that. I wasn't claustrophobic at all in that, and I'm not that comfortable with very tight spaces.
Okay. So, and it's not something you have to be very physically fit to be able to do? Anybody who can sit in a inner tube is able to do it?
I think you'd have to have an average level of fitness. You don't have to be super fit, but you do have to be able to paddle your inner tube. So
now, is that an average level of fitness for a New Zealander or for an American? Because I think they're quite different between the two, as I understand.
just generally average. I mean, yes, I think New Zealanders are more fit on average than quite a lot of different countries. But at the same time, I think that if you can go for a walk for a while or if you can go for a short run, you should be all right.
Now, New Zealanders seem to have this, death wish in terms of the sports that are developed there or that invented in New Zealand.
Yeah, we do have a lot of adventure sports.
Can you name, for instance, some of the things that have been invented in New Zealand even? The bungee jumping came from New Zealand, as I recall.
That would be the major one. I'm not sure. I think we also invented zorbing, which is
I think that's true.
Yeah, a great big ball, and you put yourself in it, and then you roll down a hill, which I haven't done, unfortunately, but it sounds like fun.
So you're like in a big gerbil ball, as I recall.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. It's crazy. I don't know what other ones we've done. There's just so many things that you can do. But yeah, I think bungee jumping is a major one.
And I don't find New Zealand, in the brief period of time that we've been there, to be at all a boring place. So what is it about New Zealanders that are drawn to these particular adventurous sports?
I don't know. It might be something in our heritage, you know, because the people who went to New Zealand had to travel by boat for 6 months from England to get there. So I suppose the kind of people who chose to do that would be rather adventurous. So I think it might be actually in the blood, but I don't know.
And we should say, unlike your neighbors to the west there in Australia, the people who went to New Zealand did choose to go to New Zealand.
Oh, we did. We are not convicts. Although, actually, I do have a convict ancestor, so I'm not completely pure from that stamp.
Okay. So in our broad overview, anything else we should talk about in the North Island? Or should we jump down to the larger island, to the South Island?
I think we've covered most of the North Island, yeah.
Okay. So, what all should we see in the South Island?
Oh, we did a tour of the South Island just before we came away, and it was just, it was absolutely amazing. We went to the Queen Charlotte Sounds. There's a couple of really famous walking tracks in the South Island. There's the Queen Charlotte Track and the Milford Track. And even if you're not the biggest fan of walking, I'd recommend doing one of these if you can, because there's packages set up where you don't have to carry your pack and you can stay in luxury lodges along the way.
I like that.
And just have an amazing time with these beautiful views. So you can kind of choose the level of fitness that you use.
Now, is that down in the Queenstown area?
Yeah, the Queen Charlotte Track is right at the top of South Island and the Milford Track is down the bottom. So they're kind of at opposite ends.
Okay.
We did the Queen Charlotte Track because it was going to be more convenient for our friends to get there, but it was incredible as well. Absolutely amazing. So we started up there and then just kind of a circle. I would definitely visit the glaciers, one of them. This is Fox Glacier and Franz Josef Glacier. And you can choose to either do a walk up to the glacier or you do a heli hike. You go up by a helicopter and they drop you off and you kind of just look around and then get back in a helicopter and go away again. And there, just like nothing else I've ever seen before, it's just ice. But you can see so far into it, it's blue, a deep blue. So that would be something I definitely recommend doing.
And I'm assuming that's something that's going to be a little more expensive if you're doing the heli-hike.
neither option is particularly cheap, but the helicopter was a bit more expensive. So that's why we did the walk rather than the helicopter flight. But we've heard about people doing it, and they said it was amazing.
Uh-huh. Okay. Other things that you would recommend in the South Island?
Well, visiting Queenstown would be a good thing if you're wanting to do any adventure sports like bungee jumping or the huge swing, which is like a bungee jump, but it's a swing instead. It doesn't look any less scary, but still looks like fun.
Wait, you said rafting. Hella swing?
I'm not sure what it's called, but it's an enormous swing, and they pull you up to a height and then let you go, and you're just swinging backwards and forwards.
Over a gorge or something like that, I'm sure.
Yeah, over a gorge. It's in a similar place to the bungee jumping.
All right.
Yep. Also, you can go dolphin watching or whale watching in Kaikoura, which is on the east coast, which we haven't done, unfortunately, but definitely a lot of fun. Visiting Oamaru is quite cool. It's famous for the Oamaru stone. It's a white stone, and all the buildings are made out of it, and it's just really gorgeous.
And where is Oamaru?
It's at the bottom of the South Island on the east coast.
Okay.
It's called the Canyon Swing. This big swing I was telling you about.
Oh, okay. All right. So what do the guidebooks recommend for New Zealand that all the tourists go to and you and Craig think it's really just a waste of time?
Why don't you try it through?
Okay. All right. Craig's just told me what he thinks, so I'll try and paraphrase. We think...
Craig's shy today.
He doesn't want to talk to you.
Well, I can understand that.
I think most of what the guidebooks have to say is quite valid, actually, because New Zealand really is incredible and there's a lot of things to see. Uh-huh. But around Rangitoto, there's a lot of kind of Maori experiences that you can go and watch a Maori show. They'll do the haka and you can have a hangi, which is like a Maori feast. And they're really good, but
I was with you with haka. I watched Whale Rider, so I know my haka, which is the dance that the Maori do that was intended to intimidate their enemies.
That's right, very good. Okay. The hangi is a Maori feast. It's made in an underground oven, and it actually is incredibly tasty. So if you ever get the chance, you should try it. So I think the Maori kind of Maori experience is really, really good, but it can just be a little bit overdone. You know, it's a bit touristy. So
sure.
I'm not sure if I'd say don't do it, because if you're wanting the Maori experience, there aren't a lot of options. But if you're choosing between that and something else, then maybe there's something else might be a better option.
Okay. Anything else? The guidebooks drive all the tourists there, but eh.
No, I don't think so. I think New Zealand is really marketed about the landscape, and the landscape really is that good. So, yeah.
We've probably all seen Lord of the Rings by now, so we've seen the gorgeous landscape of New Zealand. Even if we can't place, you know, what was where, I think people walked out of the theater with more of an interest, obviously, in going to New Zealand for the breathtaking landscapes.
Yeah, and it really, I mean, of course there's lots of towns and cities that aren't as beautiful as you might imagine, but when you're out on the open road and you're just seeing that, you know, that mountain in the distance or that field or that glacier, it really is just breathtaking. We've been traveling for 19 months and we haven't seen anything to beat it. We are rather biased though.
Sure, well that can be understood. So the opposite question, what do the tourists just miss? They just never end up going to this obscure corner of New Zealand that all the Kiwis know is wonderful.
I'd say probably the things that tourists miss is New Zealanders really love to go tramping or hiking. Mm-hmm. And the best views of New Zealand are when you just go off in the forest and see the real New Zealand away from everyone else. So I'd say if you really, really want to see what New Zealand is like, pick up a book that tells you about walking in New Zealand and go and do one of the walks.
Okay.
Tourists just don't do it, and I wish they did.
So that's part of the reason why you're saying 4 weeks, not 2 weeks, is time to get out and walk.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Any particular book you would recommend for those of us who are flying down to New Zealand for the hiking?
For hiking, there's a really good one called Weekend Walks in New Zealand, I think it's called, or Weekend Walks in... Yeah, there's two in the series. There's Weekend Walks in the North Island and Weekend Walks in the South Island. We had one of them and we just went every month to various different places around Auckland, like the Waitakere Ranges or up north further. A forest called Pūkete, which we like to walk in.
Okay. So. What is the ultimate New Zealand experience? You know you're in New Zealand when you're doing what?
I'd have to go with tramping again for me.
Okay.
I really like it. But then, of course, bungee jumping.
Bungee jumping would be the obvious answer. That's why I was interested. You went with tramping, okay?
Yeah. Well, I love tramping, and I don't particularly like bungee jumping, although I have done it. I think just getting out in the forest is the real thing, because when the first people came to New Zealand, they had to forge their way through the forest as well. And mm-hmm. I think we still have to do that now.
The one thing that you would eat that is the typical New Zealand dinner.
Okay, typical New Zealand dinner. We eat a lot of different things, but I'd say roast lamb with potatoes, roast kumara, which is a type of sweet potato, a few different vegetables as well with gravy and mint sauce. That would be the typical kind of Christmas dinner or special occasion dinner.
Okay. And the ratio of sheep to people in New Zealand is still fairly high?
It's pretty high, yeah.
10 to 1 or something?
I think it's about 8 to 1.
8 to 1?
Yeah.
As you've traveled around New Zealand, you've actually spent some time traveling around your home country before you went off and been gallivanting around the world here. What was your most pleasant surprise?
Most pleasant surprise in New Zealand?
Mm-hmm.
I've had so many great experiences in New Zealand. I think the most pleasant thing to happen was just going up the glacier.
Okay.
It was absolutely incredible. It's completely different to anything else you can do in New Zealand. So I thought that was really cool. And I was with Craig and one of our best friends, so we just had a really great day.
Okay. And this is probably going to get me the same answer, but the one day that you went someplace and thought, thank God I'm born in New Zealand.
Oh, I think that would probably be Tapurupuru, because that's a beach up the top of New Zealand.
Okay.
There's the very top point of New Zealand is called Cape Reinga, and then if you drive down for about 10 minutes, there's a beach that hardly anyone knows about. And it's just the most amazing beach. The water is clear. If you're standing up to your neck in water, you can see your feet. And there's a place you can camp, just a Department of Conservation campsite. And so we'd take our tent there and just stay there, and we'd just lie on the beach for a week. That would be our summer holiday. And it's just a great place to be, especially if you're with friends.
Excellent. Any last comments to wrap up our view of New Zealand here?
All I can say is that you should definitely go to New Zealand. Everyone should go to New Zealand. I don't think you've seen the world until you've gone to New Zealand, because it's the best place in the whole world.
Well, the other thing I would say, having just done a stopover in New Zealand, is that a little taste of New Zealand is going to leave you wanting more. We just had a free trip to New Zealand on our trip to Australia because we flew New Zealand Airlines.
Oh, nice.
We just got a day in Auckland and a couple days down in Christchurch. And we're there in wintertime too, so we went at the entirely wrong time to go, and mm-hmm. yet just really want to get back and see more in New Zealand. So it's a little infectious, I'd have to say.
I'd believe it, especially if you're only there for 3 days.
Yep. Well, thanks so much for being on the show. Say hi to Craig, who's too shy to get on the show.
Do you want to talk to him for a bit and ask him some questions?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I'll pass you over to him now.
Cool. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Craig. Now, you heard all of Linda's answers. What did she get wrong?
Well, where do I begin? Wasn't so much as where she went wrong, but some things she missed out, I guess. She talked about Northland up above Auckland, and the amazing thing there, if you go right to the tip of the north of New Zealand, on your left-hand side, you've got the Tasman Sea,
uh-huh.
and on your right-hand side, as you look out, you've got the Pacific Ocean, and it's one of the few places in the world where you can stand on solid land and watch two oceans crashing into each other. On some days, it's really fantastic. The two oceans are different colors, and as they come together, there's a big swirl and waves in the water as they kind of collide into each other. So, yeah, that's pretty amazing, and it's something you don't see many places. She forgot the Art Deco city of Napier, which is on the east coast of New Zealand, and there's a lot of good Pinot Noir and Sauvignon Blanc wine that comes from there as well. So that's a nice kind of weekend trip out from Auckland.
Okay. So east coast of the North Island.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right. The reason I guess focused on things around Auckland so much is that's where most of the international flights come in. If you fly into New Zealand from Los Angeles or from Singapore or Hong Kong, most of the flights are coming in to Auckland.
Mm-hmm.
And Christchurch, which is in the middle of the South Island, is the other international airport that gets a reasonable amount of flights, but Auckland's certainly the big one.
Okay. Actually, yeah. One thing we didn't talk about is Christchurch is also the jumping-off point for Antarctica.
That's right, yeah. If you want to go down there, it's pretty, from what I understand, I've never tried, but I will one day. It's reasonably tightly controlled, but there's more and more kind of tourism beginning to flow that way. So yeah, if you've got the chance to go, that's where you're going to be leaving from.
And we actually had Mark on the show a while back talking about Antarctica and the base for both the New Zealand and the American people who go down there is in Christchurch. And so there's also the Antarctic Center down there, which my family and I toured when we were there and enjoyed. One question I didn't ask, and I know the answer, but it's useful to ask it anyway. A lot of people ask, you're going to New Zealand, what can they see that was left over from Lord of the Rings?
Well, not a lot, actually.
Unfortunately, right.
the agreement that they had, the production company Weta, Peter Jackson's team, had with the Tolkien estate was rather tight, and they weren't letting anything go. So if you go to Hobbiton, which is a township called Matamata, maybe about 3 hours south of Auckland, mm-hmm. you can see the concrete bunkers. It's very impressive. There's grass and concrete bunkers with round holes where they filmed everything. But really, they're covered with grass. It's truly, truly spectacular and well worth all the money the people are asking for at the gate. So you just want to drive straight past there, really.
That would be that dry New Zealand sense of humor there.
Yes, indeed. Sarcasm alert. So, that's not much to see, really, but just north of Wellington, there's some spectacular natural sites where things were filmed, and dotted all over the South Island. There's a great guidebook for Tolkien fans or movie fans called The Lord of the Rings Guidebook, and it's got each location, how to get there, what was filmed there. And so if you are interested in that, that's a book for you.
All right.
Yeah,
I actually need to take off and get back to work here.
I'm five minutes
late for a meeting. Thank you both for being on the show. It's great to talk to you after hearing your show. It seems like I've talked to you before, but this is actually the first time we've talked.
It is, isn't it? It seems that way to me as well.
So before we go,
listen to your show for a year or so.
Yeah, before we go, can you plug your podcast?
Yeah, sure. Linda and I write and speak and produce the Indie Travel Podcast. It's at www.indietravelpodcast.com. We try and keep it short and sweet, about 5 minutes a week, talking about travel tips for independent travelers. Once a month we do a review, and once a month we try and fit in a short interview with someone we've met along the way. So, yeah, try and do some travel advice for the independent traveler.
Great. Well, thank you both so much for being on the show, and wish you well with the rest of your journeys.
Thank you very much. You too, Chris.
All right. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
I apologize for the awkward ending for that interview as I'm running off for a meeting, but I hope you can understand that with two kids in college and now my wife going back for another master's, I have to pay attention to the day job. I have two internet resources that seemed appropriate today. The first one is an article from Budget Travel, and I'll put links to both of these in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. The first one is on online travel auctions. So if you're interested in going to New Zealand, being as it is far and can be expensive, you might check out this article about how to navigate online auctions for travel. And the second article that I'll put a link in there for is if you're going to go on all of those wonderful treks that Linda talked about, you might be wanting the 11 Surefire Tips for Improving Your Landscape Photography article that I'll post up there that's coming from the Digital Photography School. In notes from community, I got an email a little while back from Luann, who wrote me after listening to one of the older shows, a show about San Diego. Hello, Chris. Thanks for your podcast. I'm really enjoying it. I only discovered a few months ago and in the process of going back and listening to a bunch of your old episodes. Lots of fun. I recently listened to your show about San Diego. I've only been to SD once as an adult. I can't count the time when I was 17 too long ago. I have cousins who live in Oceanside, so it's easy to dream about going back there someday. I currently live in Washington, D.C. metro area. One of the things that occurred to me is that my favorite part of my most recent visit to SD in 2001 was going to Mission San Luis Rey. While I was touring the mission, I kept thinking about how great it would be to do a couple weeks in California just going from mission to mission, thus enjoying each of the communities as well. When I first planned my visit with my cousins in 2001, I wasn't planning to go to the mission as I'm not Catholic, but I had read about the mission in San Francisco, didn't get a chance to tour it, but decided I needed to see the one in Oceanside. It's practically in my cousin's neighborhood. The history of settlement in California seems to be inseparable with the history of the network of missions along the coast. Anyway, I thought it would be nice to hear an episode of your podcast about the history of the missions in California, and or maybe a focus on some of the more popular missions for tourists to visit. Thanks again for the great podcast. Keep them coming, Luann. I happen to be a fan of history, and living in California, I did grow up as someone who really did find the missions interesting. I've thought about doing something about the missions. I'll probably do something more in the video podcast with missions and do a short one. The mission nearest me, well, the mission that I grew up nearest is San Juan Bautista, and it's a very interesting little mission, and I'm hoping to get down there sometime with my camera later on this year, perhaps. I also find the history of the missions to be very interesting. For those of you who don't know, as the Spanish came up and colonized California from Baja California up to Alto California, where I live, they planted missions basically as the center for communities about a day's ride apart. And they go as far north as Sonoma, just north of San Francisco, if I remember correctly. And so right near me, for instance, is the mission Santa Clara. And further north would be the mission Dolores in San Francisco that Luann mentioned. So yeah, I'll probably do something about that later. But again, probably in the video podcast is what I'm thinking. With that, I think we'll bring this show to a close. If you have a comment for me, I'd love to hear from you. Drop me an email at host@theamateurtraveler.com. Or Skype me at Chris Twice, or call me at 408-8494-POD. That's 408-8494-763. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
The best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show, and Limelight. Oh.